episode 355.
I think what we've done, and it's just been part of the process, and I think we've done it really without knowing it, is slowing down and taking care of the people that need to be taken care of, and not trying to be everything to everybody. You know, we try to encompass everything here at the shop and be a general automotive shop and take care of everybody that we can, but not doing that all the time, not being everything to everybody.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, welcome to Remarkable Results Radio in its 355th episode. Wow, 355. Now, when I roll that number around in my mind, it takes me back to the first. You know, I set out with a momentous goal that continues to be shattered. And it's all because of your acceptance of this long-form audio interview as a learning tool for you, your life, and your business. Hey, thanks for being here. I also want you to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts is the reason you enjoy these great aftermarket interviews. So when you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more. Now, they're the parts tech trust. Find out more, fmmotorparts.com, and thank you for supporting these brands. Carm Capriotto here with Andrew Emery, who is the owner and operator of Antero Automotive in Greenwood Village, Colorado. Andrew and his team are a huge fan of the show, and right after the interview, I had a chance to speak to Shane Coberly, who is Andrew's lead technician, who is ASE Master with L1 and L2 certifications. I discovered that Shane is always up to a tough diagnostic challenge and is committed to training. Andrew sees him as a trainer in the future. Now, before we jump into the interview, thanks to my newest Facebook friends, Todd Kane, Vinny Automotive, Adrian Bravo, Phil Finley, and Young Jung Kim, and my newest Instagram followers, David Lewis and Scott Kershaw. And my newest Instagram followers, David Lewis and Scott Kershaw, and new LinkedIn connections, Paul Lowers, Emily Beatler, and Ron Usher. Get connected. RemarkableResults.biz/social. You know, it's really important to understand the deep value of connections we have with people. Put your focus on your people and not profit, because profit will always come after. These are one of the valuable lessons Andy Emery shares with us in this episode. Andy came from a family who owned a full-service gas station. Growing up, he understood the value of serving the customer from his stepfather. Andrew says his business grew because he knew how to deal with people. In business for 10 years and hit the 2 million sales mark in 2012. Great story about him starting his own business when the recession hit in 2008. Andy not only takes good care of his customers, he takes care of his people as well. He pays for training for his techs, and he commits to 30 hours every year for himself as CEO. He believes if you take care of your people, they'll take care of your customers. Find the key talking points, the business profile, and Andy's bio at remarkableresults.biz/E355. Andrew says he's got the best job in the world. A warm welcome to Andy Emery from Antero Automotive, Greenwood Village, Colorado. Hello there, Andrew.
Hello, Carm. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. What a great story. I love your story. 10 years ago, you decided to sign a lease on the building that you're in, and you told me that was the day the stock market crashed. Now, what are we going to do? We need to borrow money.
Right, exactly. We thankfully had a friend of the family that was willing to back us and gave us a small personal loan so that we were able to pay cash for all of our equipment and able to get in and get this process started.
So take me back to that day. What was your gut feeling?
My gut feeling was good, that this was going to work. I make mistakes and I stumble and fall, but I try not to fail at anything that I do. And this, I really had a good head of steam and really familiar with this area, had good customer base in this area and thought, well, let's go for it. What better time, you know, take the leap.
And you wanted to break the stereotype of the typical automotive shop, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, coming from family-owned automotive shops in the past, stepfather has an automotive shop and working for the big corporate guys and seeing how they do it and how I don't want to do it. And yeah, just wanted to really just serve people. I say I've got the best job in the world. I get to work on cars and I get to take care of people. That's what I do all day long. It's awesome.
How many people can say they're doing exactly what they want to do?
Yeah, not very many. I think there's times where I think, man, that maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I should be doing something else. You know, you have those bad days, but man, the good outweighs the bad so many times and has for 10 years. And that's what kept me going.
What would you do over?
I would go through some sort of business training and just have a little bit better grasp of numbers, what I'm looking for in profit, what I'm looking for in assets, and a better understanding of that.
That's a big statement and a statement I hear a lot. And, you know, there's the old story, I can't afford to have a business coach. And then the guys that have had it and done it and been successful with it will say, you can't afford not to.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree. And, you know, I just hired a business coach. Oh, it was November of last year. And my business coach said, I don't know how you've made it this far without one, you know, and put up the numbers and done what you've done.
Well, good stock, $2.2 million in 10 years.
Not bad.
Yeah, with an ARO of $625 and change. So how'd you get that $625? I know what you're going to say, Carm, all we do is take care of people.
You know, that's it. And it's not magic. It's not rocket science. You know, I went back and started looking through numbers through the business and from the start or from the inception. And we really have hit a plateau. And I think what we've done, you know, and I'm looking back at 2011 and to 2012 was the first time that we did 2 million in sales. And then from there, it just kind of stayed the same. But what changed was the amount of invoices that we were processing or the amount of cars that we were working on. So where we had seen, you know, 2011, 2012, in that year, we'd, you know, 5,600 invoices or 5,600 repairs. You know, the next year we stayed the same as far as sales go, but we dropped to about 4,500 and our profit went up a little bit.
Magic, magic.
Yeah. The next year, same thing, about the same number in sales, profit jumped another 3 points, went down to 4,100 invoices. So I think what we've done, and it's just been part of the process, and I think we've done it really without knowing it, is slowing down and taking care of the people that need to be taken care of and not trying to be everything to everybody. You know, we try to encompass everything here at the shop and be a general automotive shop and take care of everybody that we can, but not doing that all the time, not being everything to everybody.
Listen, I give you a lot of credit for the philosophy that you have about taking care of people and building relationships, but is DVI a piece of that?
DVI is a huge piece of that. DVI, when we brought that on, looks like we brought it on in about 2015. We signed up with Auto Vitals when I think Auto Vitals was just kind of starting up at that point and had good success with it and then moved over to the guys at Bolt-On. And, you know, really with Auto Vitals, almost right away, we did an inspection on a car and sent it to the customer, and it was a $2,500 sale. And it was right then we knew this is awesome. This is like magic, and nobody else is doing this right now.
So why is the industry not getting on board as rapidly as they should? I mean, I talked to the guys that own these companies, and I guess at best, maybe there's 10% of the industry that's on board with this. Now, the people that I interview, it's amazing. They all do DVI. We all spread the word of its value. But yet, what would you say to someone who has maybe not decided to maybe, is it change? Is it is something new? My techs don't want to have tablets?
I think it's all of those, honestly. And really, you just can't be afraid of the change. You just do it, right? I mean, it's an investment in your business. It's just like if you were going to buy a new J2534. You know, from Autologic or from Drew Tech, or, you know, if you're going to buy a new scan tool, whatever it is, it's the same thing.
It's a tool, but it firmly equates to the bottom line.
Absolutely. And yeah, there is a bit of a learning curve. You know, it is hard. We've got a variety of technicians in the shop from older technicians to younger technicians. And the older ones struggled a bit at first. The younger ones grasped it, but ultimately it works.
But you didn't lose anybody over DVI. Wow. Okay.
No.
Okay. Good.
No.
Good.
There was, you know, as from a employer standpoint, I've got to have everybody's buy-in, and we try to treat it that way. Try to treat it as a team, and everybody has a say in it. So they got to build their own inspections or be a part of building the inspections, and so then everybody had some buy-in. Everybody had a little skin in it, and and it's just taken off.
I'm talking with Jonathan Cicchelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So, Jonathan, how does a service professional get the guru on the go van to their shop?
There's a couple ways. We do what we call cold calls, where we go around and just visit shops based on geographics. And there's also times where we team up with outside sales reps from other parts distributors and visit the shops on that basis.
So I love this. You pull into a shop on a cold call, they see the van, and they're probably excited to see you.
Yeah. I've had a couple shops where they've actually have already heard of the gurus via Facebook or social media. So when I show up, they've already been signed up and taken online classes, and now that the van's there, it's really easy to book a lunch and learn.
So you're really an extension of the Garage Guru training centers.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're all done with your lunch and learn. You spend 45 minutes to an hour. Probably that's all you can really get from a busy, busy shop. What are the technicians saying about your shop visit?
Oh, they love it. They thank me, you know, every second I'm walking out the door and just can't wait for me to come back again.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. You think back of the 10 years, any big monumental thing that you did that really equates to the success that you're having today? And I also want you to talk about any new things that you may be doing as you're evolving.
You know, I don't know, going back through, I don't know that there were any huge steps that I took. I think the one thing that really propelled me to where we're at now and really got the name out is I made good friends with the manager at a Discount Tire down the street from me. And they don't do alignments, they do tires. I don't want to do tires, I want to do alignments. So they had been sending their alignments to a corporate shop right across the street from me. And I just got my foot in the door and said, hey, as a manager of Discount Tire, you're not going to pay for any repairs for your family's cars or your cars at my shop ever if you send your customers to me to get their alignments taken care of.
Oh, there's a deal.
Yeah, it worked out really good. And so from there, customers would come up, we'd do alignments, we'd treat them right, wash their car for them after the service, you know, just take care of them the way that they need to be taken care of. And they spread the word. And so that really launched us into where we're at.
Is washing a car just a standard SOP that you do for all customers?
Absolutely. We're attached to a do-it-yourself style car wash. And so I've made a deal with the car wash owner that we get a discount on some car washes. And I have some service porters here that work for me. So every car that comes to the shop, whether it's a light bulb or an oil change or 10 grand worth of work, is going to get a car wash.
They're getting washed. Wow. So you're loving on your customers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have to, right? I mean, we want to treat them like family. We want to treat them like, we want to build that relationship. I'm in this community and I'm planning to be in this community for a long period of time. So I want to work on, you know, mom and dad's car. And when the kid starts driving, I want to start working on their car and so on and so forth and down the line. So
ever thought of going away from flat rate?
No, not really. Flat rate pay for my technicians, you mean, or just flat rate hourly?
Yeah, for techs, yeah.
No. We did. We tried that last year. And maybe I didn't implement it correctly. Maybe I should have. This was prior to me having a business coach. As a matter of fact, I brought my business coach on as this was failing. It just didn't work. Productivity went in the tank. So it just didn't work out for us. And I don't know why.
I was going to ask you, what'd you learn from it? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think technicians are human. Everybody's looking out for the better of the shop. But it really made it so that they wouldn't have to necessarily stay that extra 30 minutes and finish up that car. Or, you know, and maybe, again, it wasn't implemented properly. Maybe it wasn't enforced properly. But, man, as soon as we switch back to flat rate pay, all of a sudden they're flagging 60, 70 hours again and life is good.
Any bonus program for them?
We do have a bonus program that we've worked on, we've put in play, and now we're tweaking it a little bit more. We're working on a bonus program for everybody. I like to keep my service advisors and my sales crew or salary crew on salary. I don't like to pay them on a commission base. I don't believe that my manager, service advisors, any of those guys should have to sell for their paycheck.
Is it going to be based on gross margin? What's it going to be? Is there a base that you could share with us?
The base that we're working on right now, the base that the sales the sales crew or the service advisors are on, are, is going to be on or is on parts profit, particularly driven off of parts profit, because that's where we've seen where we're lacking. And this is coming from my coach. My parts profit is not where it should be. Again, me learning more about my business and more about my numbers.
There's so much discussion in the industry, Andy, about pay and about being able to bring in technicians and paying a really good wage so they stick around and your customers are taken care of and your business can grow so that you have less turnover and you have all these great mouths to feed and it's, you know, it's, and you share financials. You pay pretty well, I'm assuming. Was it the chicken or the egg? I paid them well and then I had to learn how to make the money, or I made money and then I gave up some of the wealth?
I think it was, I've always paid well. I've always believed that, just like you said, if you pay somebody well, they're going to stick around. You treat them right, they're going to stick around. And I think the same thing goes for employees, for customers. Just treat people right and be fair with them. That being said, though, this summer has been tough. This has been a tough season for us. I lost two technicians right at the start of the summer. One of my technicians took a job that was paying substantially better than me. So I, you know, unfortunately couldn't compete with them. So we lost one of a technician that had been with us for 5 years. Now, this technician is a younger guy, maybe doesn't quite understand the loyalty side of things.
Millennials will change jobs. Was he a millennial?
He was a millennial.
Okay.
He was a millennial.
Did you lose them outside the industry or within the industry?
Within the industry.
Think back. What would you do different in order to keep them? Or was the offer so unbelievable that you couldn't come close and have it be fair?
That's exactly what it was. It was so unbelievable, and it was another salary position, and it just completely untouchable, you know. And I think that I don't think that there's anything I can do different. He's since contacted and want to come back, but I don't have an a position open for him.
Oh, that's interesting. Which one? Which one? The millennial?
Yeah.
And considered coming back, but you don't have an opening. Wow.
Now I don't have an opening.
Interesting.
So maybe the grass wasn't greener.
Yeah, maybe the grass wasn't greener. See, I guess I'm a curious type person, which is why I think I love what I do as far as being interviewing. And I would love to, hey, let's go have coffee. And without really getting too, you know, zeroed in, I would just sit and listen and have the guy open up and tell you, because I think you could learn a lot from that.
Absolutely. And you know what? As a matter of fact, I did do that. You know, when he left, it wasn't necessarily on the best of terms. Knowing where he was coming from, his speech was, I need to look out for my family and I need to make more money. He's a man with three kids, three small children at home, and a wife that's not working. So, you know, and I understand where he's coming from. I've got four kids myself. So coming from that, I wanted to talk to him, not out of anger when we spoke. And unfortunately I felt like I came at him a bit harsh when he spoke to me about leaving. And this is a man that I support. I support all of my employees. This is a man that I've supported for a long period of time, helped him. You know, he broke his hand, so I paid him on salary for him to be my parts manager for 2 months while his hand healed, you know, helped his family out personally. So, which I would for any of my employees. So again, going back to that loyalty, I think I was just a little hurt. And took it personally. So it didn't end the way that I wanted to. So I reached out to him around the 4th of July and he agreed and we met and had lunch and just talked to him about that, not offering him his job back or begging for him back, but more or less just to apologize and say, hey, I'm sorry. This isn't the way that I want to end this relationship. We've been through a lot together. He's been with me for 5 years. And, you know, from there he did. He opened up a little bit, but still sounds like it just is driven by the dollar so much, you know, driven by pay so much that
singular focus at this moment in his life.
At this moment,
it's all about the money.
Absolutely,
he left a great culture. Did you find out that maybe he's missing that?
Yes, and so he's come back once again about 2.5 weeks ago and came in and apologized to the technicians here for leaving them, and again wanting to come back, but unfortunately, we don't have that position right now.
Great story. I love it. I'm sure there's a million that can relate to it. Shop owners are out there in business even longer than 10 years that you have been, not even doing 2.2 mil. And they set out to, I know, reach those types of goals in probably a 10-year period, but also to have a great, great reputation. What advice can you give about earning and growing a reputation?
Again, it's treating people right and doing whatever it takes. From washing the cars after every service. We started putting these little tins of cookies in their cars that say thank you on them with their logo on there. Follow-up texts, follow-up emails, follow-up phone calls, make sure that everything's okay and copacetic with their repairs, and just staying in constant contact with the customer and staying right in front of them at all times. And from there, you know, it's just kind of built itself. It's making sure that you're thanking them for their business and making sure that you can finish on a handshake or, you know, a smile or something, and making sure that you're completely focused on them at that moment. You know, running as many cars and as much business as we run through this shop, and with really just two guys at the front counter, they're seeing a lot of people and having a lot of contact with customers on a daily basis. And so they need to make sure that they slow down and thank and talk to every one of our customers.
I know you're not Superman, but it sure sounds like you are.
No,
I'm sure in your career, Andrew, you've lost a customer or two.
You bet.
Have they ever come back, and why?
I never really found out why. And it's funny you say that, because we just had a customer call and he's on the schedule for Tuesday of next week. Hasn't been to us since 2012. Talked to one of my service advisors at the front and said, you know, hey, I had a bad experience with you guys, but I want to give you guys another shot. And this is 6 years now that it's been. And so, you know, my advisor did the right thing. It didn't necessarily pry and just said, hey, listen, you know, we have changed a lot from 2012. We've got a really solid technician crew. They're all master certified. We'd love to have your business back. So when he does come in on Tuesday, we'll find out what happened. And if it's something that we need to rectify, even if it's 6 years ago, there's no statute of limitations. We can fix it.
Are you in the business all the time?
I try to be.
Okay. That's a good answer, because, you know, you've grown a great business. You don't necessarily always have to be there. It sounds like you're scaling the business. But would you make it a point to know when he's coming in and then sit him off in the weight room and say, hey, Bob, glad you're here. Why were you gone so long? Would you do that?
Okay. Absolutely. All right. Yeah, you bet. You bet. Because I want to know. I feel like we lose more customers to them just moving away than we do in general. You know, I think that the customers, just via my email list, and that's something we can go into with Kukui. I mean, Kukui has done amazing things with my business, but or allowed me to see amazing things with the business. But just from the people that have, you know, unsubscribed from my email chain that I send out, it's most of them are coming back with moved away. I don't have customers that say we have poor service or we hated dealing with so-and-so at the front counter. It's been good.
Well, congrats to you. You sound like a person who believes in Kaizen, you know, that continuous improvement. You know,
yes.
Fix it before it breaks concept,
yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
How has that helped your business?
Just by making sure that we're a step ahead of everything. We're a step ahead of any problem that might come up, whether it's with customers or it's, you know, we know we've got a car coming in for a certain service and we need special tools. Let's get those tools ordered up and let's have them here. Anything like that, I just try to be prepared. And then on top of that, open to change, and not being too bullheaded to know that it's time to change or time to do something different.
BDG, Napa Group in town. Was it a help for you?
It is. And I think with the BDG, you get what you put in. You get out what you put in, right? And there's times where we're all busy within the BDG. And there's times when I can't make it to an EOS meeting or to a support meeting, or there's times when I can't make it to a webinar. And so I can't say, well, it's not working for me because I'm not in it. But the times when I get myself involved and I'm present in the BDG, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Networking. Yes, that's the key, right?
Yeah, huge. Absolutely. And just to feel out what's going on out there. I mean, you know, you brought up pay. You know, how do we know? How do I know that my technicians are paid well? I went around and matter of fact, after we lost our technicians in the summertime, and talked to the guys that were here and said, hey, you know, how am I paying you? Are you okay? You know, do we need to adjust it? Do you feel like you're underpaid? You know, of course, they're not going to tell me that they're overpaid.
Yes, boss. Whatever you want to drop, I'll be willing to accept.
Yeah, no, that's not the case. But come to find out, they're happy. They're getting paid well. They can support their families. You know, they're not overly greedy. They live they live within their means, and it's good. So I honestly believe that I pay very well.
If you went to the BDG and, you know, just went to that little group, you know, after the meeting breaks up and the real networking happens and you're hanging out with three or four of your friends, do you ever ask, what are you paying your guys? Tell me the truth. Do you ever say that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And that helps you understand.
That does help me understand.
You know what ghosting is?
I don't.
Ghosting is when somebody says they're coming and they don't show up.
Mm.
Okay. Or they text you and say, I'm sorry, boss, I took another job, or, you know, from somewhere else. Has ghosting ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Would you learn from it? And do you have any method to prevent it?
I don't know. I don't have a method yet to prevent it. I wish that I did. But we had a matter of fact, a handful of weeks ago when I left to go, I went on a missions trip and took 19 teenagers down to the Dominican Republic and had a technician hired before I left. I left on a Tuesday. Monday would be his first day. Didn't show up to work on Monday. Texted me and said that he had a family emergency and couldn't make it. Showed up to work on Tuesday while I was gone. Wednesday, that family emergency turned into a funeral. So text my manager and told him that he couldn't make it on Wednesday, showed up to work on Thursday and Friday, so worked 3 days out of his first week, then text on Sunday night and said, yeah, this just isn't going to work out for me. You guys are way too busy and it's too hard on my body, so I can't make it to work. So never actually had any interaction with this technician, just text.
Good story. Thank
not
you.
Really.
Well, I know, not a good story for you, but a good story for our listening audience.
Right.
There's probably a lot of empathy going on right now. Yes, I feel your pain, Andrew.
I hope so.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's brutal. And you know, that's something else, too. With the technician shortage, you know, I'm curious, and I've been listening to your podcasts and talking with others in the BDG about our technician shortage and what do we do about our technician shortage. I have my shop, we've got 8 bays, really utilize 7 of them. The 8th bay is kind of an odd bay, so we use that when we do engines and whatnot. You know, and we crank out a lot of work here. And so I can pretty much guarantee that if you want to come to work, you can flag 50 to 60 hours a week without any problem. I can't find a technician that wants to do that. With that, I would like to be able to bring in some apprentice technicians, some younger technicians, C-level technicians that can train. Unfortunately, in my position or where we are as a shop, we'd almost have to take some steps backwards and really slow the business down and slow productivity down to train somebody.
That's an interesting dilemma that you think you have or the business isn't prepared for it. You've not tried it, but you think that's going to happen.
Well, we've tried it in a sense that we've had a quote-unquote lube technician or general service technician. We just didn't have the personnel to monitor his work or to quality control his work. Or
so mentoring, assigning a mentor and having a absolutely full-blown career path outlined for this individual as far in including, you know, bumps in pay by going through certain training, getting ASE certifications. None of this full-blown grow my own mentality can be embraced by you and the team?
I think that it could be. How do we implement it? If I go through my notes over the last 2 years, is how do we train a tech to work for our shop? You know, we've just had this mentality of let somebody else train them, we'll hire them.
Bingo. And you know what? That's part of our technician shortage.
They're
being coveted by companies like you. Great culture, good pay, great bonus system. And they just don't feel like leaving because they love the career that they currently have, the environment that they have, and they're right. Not going to leave. And you're going to wonder where they are. Well, they're fat and happy somewhere.
That's right.
And I don't mean that to be negative. I love this industry, and I say that in a very loving way. I'm happy that techs are happy with what they're doing. So much of what we've talked about. In fact, Kyle Holt, recent interview, the panel I'm going to moderate it at ASTE, and the panel I'm going to moderate in Apex, we're all dealing with this. Are you involved in a local college? Are you on an advisory board?
I'm not. As a matter of fact, though, there is the local college, Lincoln Tech, is having a career fair coming up in, I believe, about 3 weeks.
And you should be there.
Absolutely.
And you should have a table, and you should bring tchotchke to pass out and your business cards and do some on-site interviews. I mean, I'm involved in that. In our local college, I've seen those career fairs work. There's not enough independents that show up there. And you should get on their board, and you should get on the inside track. Or if not, just get an appointment with the department chair and say, listen, I want to reach out. I want to help. I want to be able to find a really top senior who's looking to come into the independent world. I want to give tours of my shop to your students. All of these help you start seeding a long-term goal. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
It's not going to happen overnight. You've got to start doing a lot of things differently, or, you know, is part of a strategic element to grow your own.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
This whole mentoring thing, you're going to start seeing an awful lot about it. There's going to be a lot of, you know, apprentice programs or mentoring pathways. And in fact, Kyle Holt was mentioning that his company SB2 is creating a mobile app for mentoring.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, you could literally, you know, grade or move the person through the chairs and through the ranks. So, cool. I'm glad we had this talk, because anytime I have a chance to talk about growing our own and what are we going to do with our post-secondary grads who don't seem to want to stay in the industry. 40% of them leave the industry after 2 years.
And that's horrible. We've got a couple of kids that work for me that are just out of high school, and they're really just my service porters, and they're washing cars and shuttling customers, picking up parts and whatnot. But one of them started talking about wanting to be a technician. And, you know, we've had technicians that can make six figures. The investment, though, in the tools and the toolbox and the training and everything else is large. You know, it's hard to say, well, you can go to school and it's 30 or 40 grand to go to school, but then you get out and you've got to spend another 10, 15, 20 on tools.
And you got to fix that. You got to offer some money to pay for the college loan. You've got to offer a tool program.
Absolutely.
I've even heard texts. Yeah, I left to go to work in the forklift industry, and they're even paying for new boots every year. You know, steel-toed boots. I mean, how hard is that? I mean,
right.
It's just a great idea. It gets chalked up to the benefit list. And, you know, I think there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, Andrew. I'm glad to hear you. Sorry, I got up on my own little soapbox here. So niching, you're doing hybrid repairs. Would you call that a niche?
Yes and no. We don't push it as hard as we should. But I do notice, you know, drive from here through the tech center and you'll see a countless number of Priuses or Insights on the road. So there's no reason why not to capture some of that business. I don't necessarily want all of it, because I don't know that hybrid repair is and can be that profitable. It hasn't shown to be yet in our business so much as the European market in our area. The European market seems to be a little bit stronger. So that's what we focus on.
Fleets, do you do any fleet business?
We do. We work on a couple of ambulances or ambulance fleets. We've got some construction companies, things like that.
I love the philosophy that you started your business with when we first spoke. Don't focus on the profit, focus on the people, and the profit will come. Where'd you learn that?
I don't know. I think that's just how I've been brought up. You know, coming up, my stepfather had a full service gas station over here in the tech center. His father started it in 1966 when one of the main thoroughfares was a dirt road. I came aboard, I think, when I was 16 or 17, running out and filling cars up with gas, washing windows, checking the oil.
Full service, kind of baby.
Full service gasoline, man. And I think there's two or three left in the state. There's not very many. But from there, it was just watching him on how he treated customers and taking care of customers. And he had his only background is knowing that and working for his father in that service station with two bays and full service gasoline. So he didn't really have a technical background. He had technicians that knew it, and he had a service advisor / cashier that knew it really well. And just took care of people. That's all he did.
You watched his level of service, the integrity, the do right rule. You watched all that happen. It became ingrained in who you are. And then in turn, can someone who doesn't have that built in still offer a great personal relationship to customers? Is it phony to do that, or do you have to have it built in?
I don't know. I don't know that it would be phony. I think that you could, but you still have to come across genuine, right? And have genuine concern and sympathy, empathy for your customers. You want to make sure that they know that you want to help them out, that you're there for them.
Good stuff. Thanks. You told me you get about 30 hours of training a year, CEO, if you will, quote unquote type training. Where do you go for it?
Vision Conference. I like the Vision Conference. That's a good one. Venn Waterhouse does some stuff. Napa does some things like that. Bottom Line Impact Group is a group that I'm looking at.
Training. You're paying training for your techs?
Absolutely. We have to. Right. I shouldn't have to. They shouldn't have to pay for it. I believe I want them to further their education. And in turn, that's only going to help the business. So it's an investment for the business. So absolutely pay their training. If dinner's not provided at training, I'll make sure that they have some money for dinner. But
so they don't hurt in any regards. I mean, if it was daytime training, you're going to pay them for missing the day. You're going to schedule around them. This seems to be no brainer stuff to me. And yet there's so much pushback in the industry for daytime where the quality of training is so much higher. And then there's the attitude that says if they want to learn and they want to bring value to the business, then let them go out and pay for their own training. And well, I'm looking at his face right now, and he's got this look of angst on his face, like, what?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? I mean, they don't pay for their certifications. My deal with their certifications when it comes to the ASEs or anything else, I'll pay for it, but they have to pass the test.
Bingo. I mean, that's just fair.
Right.
Cool. Hey, do you dream?
Absolutely. I dream of expanding. I dream of being out of the business at some point. I dream of having my kids to have some part of this business or learning part of this business. I've got four of them, so I've got a 25% chance that one of them, just one of them, is going to like this. I don't know. We'll see. I want to grow, and I think right now where we're at, we're busting at the seams. I don't know that we can handle a whole lot more here at the shop. We need to find a bigger building. Read about Denver and the property values in Denver and metro areas. They're going through the roof. So right now is a tough time to expand. So we're just going to hang on. Wait for property values to hopefully settle down a little bit and see what we can't find. The problem where we're at, there's just no space. There's not really a lot of space to expand. And I don't want to leave this area, so.
Okay, acquisition strategy is a growth strategy. I just heard a number the other day, 63 years old is the average age of a shop owner. I think that sounds a little high. I think it was 55 a few years back. But is that possible that you could do an acquisition?
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. It's certainly an option.
Are you afraid of anything?
Failure.
You've not learned from it?
I've learned from it, sure. There's that little thing in the back of my head going, you know, what if customers stop coming? What if everybody quits? You know that?
So that's your motivator. You're always reaching out and analyzing and thinking and developing and changing and marketing. Tell me when to stop.
No, yeah, you're right. You know, right now we're working on, I'm working on just changing our image, changing our brand, changed up our logo. I got together with a couple of different designers and we've redesigned and revamped our logo. We've got new work shirts coming. We've got t-shirts that we've had made. We've got new hats. We've got, you know, all that stuff. And now we're making a big push to change our brand. After 10 years, we're going to change our logo a little bit and, you know, kind of give it a new, fresh look.
I wrote that word down as you were speaking, fresh.
Got to keep it fresh.
No moss grows on Andrew.
Oh, man.
No moss.
I don't sit still for a minute, sir.
So many shop owners have a tough, tough time going from tech to CEO.
Yes.
Those are major pivots. Any great story to tell that, you know, one day you woke up and said, this is what I better be doing?
I woke up one day and just tired of having my knuckles busted. And could see from a technician standpoint what customers were going through. And I thought, you know what? I can take care of people as well. I can help people out and I can fix their cars. And so that's what I set out to do. Didn't have any service advisor training, didn't really have any customer relations training. Just knew that I like talking to people and I like helping people out and I like dealing with people. So I thought I'd give it a shot. And, you know, had a little two bay set up on the side of a gas station just down the street from where I'm at now and gave it a shot. And turns out it worked. You know, it was me and one other guy working on cars, and he was working on cars. I was working on cars, and I was also helping customers out and ordering parts and doing that side of things and kind of wearing many hats. But man, I fell in love with it and thought, you know what? I can do this. I can run my own gig. And so it wasn't a short time later. I think from there, I did a little corporate stint for about 4 years. And from there, after that, I said, you know what? It's time.
10 years in business, 2.2 mil. Wow. We talked a little bit about love earlier, about loving on your customers. Obviously, your culture is strong, and it's a caring culture. Final question for our listener. How do you create that kind of powerful culture of caring inside of a company?
Love on everybody here. A lot of my life through different shops or different companies, and even when I first started here, it was always leave your emotions, leave your problems at the door, come to work, work your shift 8 to 10 or 8 to 6 or whatever it is, work your shift and then go home, you know, to collect your paycheck and go home. And we don't want to deal with your problems. I've learned that these guys are just as human as I am. They have families, they have problems just like I do. If they have problems at home, they have financial problems, they need to go to the doctor, whatever it is, health problems. I want to walk through that journey with them. Now, there's that line. I don't want to cross that line and get too much involved in their personal lives, but if they need help, I'm here to help them out, not just my customers. It's hard to say, well, I want to love on my customers and take care of my customers and bend over backwards for my customers. But you, technician, you got to just come in, nose to the grindstone, work, and then go home. And whatever problems you have, you have. I want to be here and take care of them. And so I think that having that and walking through that with them, you know, helping them or celebrating their kids' birthdays with them or celebrating their wife's birthdays or you know, knowing their anniversaries or knowing their favorite Starbucks drinks or, you know, whatever it is, love on them. They're going to in turn want to love on our customers and take care of our customers.
Well, take care of your people. They'll take care of your customers.
Right. Is that new? I don't think that's new.
No, it's not new. Okay. And it's something that I really believe that the industry is starting to make a major pivot in that. And so many extremely successful shop owners, this is how they do it. Just the way you're doing it. It's great. Andy Emery, Antero Automotive, Greenwood Village, Colorado. Thanks so much for sharing with us today.
You're welcome, Carm. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it, man. Big fan. It's awesome.
Thank you, Andrew Emery, for joining us on Remarkable Results Radio and sharing your love of cars and customers. Find the key talking points, additional bio information, and website links at remarkableresults.biz/E355. And don't forget about the mounting interviews and roundtables with technicians and educators. You can find the series listed on the show notes sidebar on the website. Spend some time and see the mountain of content that will inspire you to find the next level in your life and career. I love to hear your thoughts. Email me, carm@remarkableresults.biz. Talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.